Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and today I'm really excited to be joined by Alicia Spencer. Now, I really wanted to get Alicia on because she's a teacher, but she also got a side project or a passion project called Feather and Tassel, where she has developed workshops and resources that help develop gratitude, mindfulness, empathy, really resilience-based resources where she delivers in person and also, as I said, creates the resources. So she combines that passion project but also runs workshops away from school but also embeds those practices within her teaching, which she teaches home economics as one of the subjects that she teaches, and she'll share a bit more about that with us today. But I'm really excited to get into this episode today, and without further ado, we'll get started. Alicia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I wanted to have you on, particularly to talk about because you're a teacher at the moment, and also you have a project or a business or whatever you wanted to call it, a passion project. I guess it's different terminologies, but called Feather and Tassel, and you do that away from school, but also you include some of those principles within your teaching as well. So I really wanted to talk about that. But first of all, I want to love to hear a bit about your background and I guess what inspired you to become an educator.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always enjoyed playing sport growing up. So being involved in a team, communicating with people of all ages. As I got into year 12, I did year 12 PE, and I really just loved the sense of community and camaraderie of working together with other people and like-minded people as well, and the sense of challenge and competition and wanting to, you know, better yourself in your sport. So naturally, I went on to uni and I did a double degree in health science and education in middle school, and I majored in health and PE. So when I did my placements, I wanted to go country and try some different experiences. So I went back to where I was born in Crystal Brook, and I went to Gladstone High School up there, which was such a great experience. And I think that all teachers should have a bit of a country placement just to get a bit of a taste of different things that you can be exposed to. And then I ended up getting a gig back at my high school, which I am still at now. So since 2011, I've been back at the high school that I attended myself. Slowly moved into the health realm. And that's where I am now. So I've been doing a bit of SACE moderating and marking and working with all things wellbeing. That's really where my passion has now diverted to, I guess, and that's where this conversation's come up about well-being and helping others out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that school that you attended yourself in Adelaide, Henley High, and then you end up going back getting a teaching position there. So you've spent probably what, half your life at Henley High?
That makes me feel really old, but I guess it's close to home. It's somewhere that I want to send my own kids to. It's close to the beach. You know, you need a bit of a reset, go for a walk during your lunch break down at the beach, a bit of a mindful moment. You know, you can't really go wrong. And there's a lot of other staff that are old scholars as well, or have done their placement here. So it definitely is a bit of a family vibe here at Henley. And it's really nice to come to work each day and, you know, that you've got a friend to lean on if you ever need it. So, it's a really nice place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Henley High was a brilliant school. Last year? Yeah, 2024, did some work there with the sports specialist groups there. It's a great school, great staff, and you can see why it's a great place to be for sure.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to move on to, like, the health and well-being that you, I guess, got interested in. So what inspired you to start creating your own health and well-being resources for teachers and students?
Yeah. So I reckon you probably had a bit of intel into that. I attended one of your PD days two or three years ago, and what you and Dale were putting together was really engaging and probably one of the most interactive PDs that I'd ever been to. And it just sort of gave me a bit of inspiration to not necessarily reinvent the wheel, but take snippets of different ideas from different other professionals and put my own spin on it. And after having two kids and returning back to work in a part-time sense, you have to work smarter, not harder, and being more efficient with your time management. So I thought if I could use some resources that I've developed to help out other people in the same kind of boat, there's a lot of other parents of young kids at my school as well. So just trying to support each other and work collaboratively and not have to do everything on your own. I think that's been really great at the site that I'm at, that everyone shares resources and we have each other's back and we're not having to do everything from scratch every single time. I feel like the burnout rates would be ridiculous otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you make some, like, actually, when you spoke about that then, about, I guess, creating those resources to share with other staff. So you were in the same boat with young kids. Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting in place to start. And did you kick that off while you were on maternity leave and you were doing that at home before you came back to school? Is that how it sort of came about?
I guess the whole feather and tassel came about. I really enjoy doing a lot of sewing and that sort of come from my mum. And I would make my own dream catchers and little boho clutch bags and I would sell them at markets with mum with her own products she was selling as well. So I guess that creative flair then turned into wellbeing resources and being creative and, you know, using Canva and other platforms to make resources look more aesthetic and pleasing for kids in the classroom to actually use. So I guess it had developed back on maternity leave when I was 2018, but then has then developed into the educational realm, I guess. And that's now where my driving force is to make sure that, you know, other people can have good work-life balance and not have to start from scratch with their resources. So that's my why behind that, because I know how hard it is as a parent and you can be time poor and like this morning, not having a lot of sleep last night, but you know, we make it work and we know our stuff and we love our job and what we do. That's why we do it. And we want to make sure that, you know, the kids that we are teaching, they are our kids. They're not just our students. You know, I don't know how many other professions would actually go to their families and talk about their day and say, oh yeah, my kids did this today. And they're actually talking about the students that they're teaching. So there is that beautiful bond and the relationship that you do, you know, you make with 100 kids, depending on how many kids students you teach in your week. But yeah, it is all about the students. And if we're happy as staff members and facilitators, then it's going to make it that much easier in the classroom to get them on side and build relationships with them and provide positive spaces for them to learn and flourish as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like how, I think what you said before is a really good point about you don't have to reinvent everything yourself. Like there's, I mean, we live in a world where you can pretty much access anything now. Like
exactly.
The good thing about it is, like, you could, as you say, like, you can take little bits from everyone. And that's what how I started, really, like, just researching about gratitude back in 2014 and realized it could be practiced. And how do we get kids to practice? Or what's the best ways to get young people to practice?
Yeah.
I'm just searching, and then you come up, I guess, with your own philosophy at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then sort of put your own spin on it to make, whatever you want to make to deliver to whether that's students or teachers or parents. So yeah, I love how you've gone about that. And it's really interesting how you started with the more textiles side, sewing and making like the different dream catchers, were they? Then taking those skills and I guess putting them into the more well-being side to teach young people, which is pretty cool. I love that. Story. And it's one of those things, like, you start out doing something and it changes, but I think the key is just to start and then
100%.
As you go. And I think one of the most important things to teach young people, but for adults as well, like, who are trying to create or in the process of creating or maybe a passion project, it's just a matter of starting and working your part as you go. Now, Alicia, you focus on gratitude, resilience and kindness. I think that's fair to say. So why do you think these are essential skills for young people and how do you integrate them into the classroom? And I know that you teach, can you just share the subjects that you're currently teaching and how you go about in the subjects?
So I've got a year 11 care group this year that I had last year as well. So continuing on those relationships, I've found it a lot easier this year to get more out of them. And I'm also teaching year 11 and 12 health and wellbeing and 2 year 8 home ec classes. So that's divided into a term of food, which we're doing this term, and a term of health, which we run the Shine SA program. And we talk about relationships and sexual health, consent, puberty, all of that sort of stuff. So I guess mostly my focus has been on my year 11s and 12s in the senior school. And last year I decided to try something different. Our timetable structure has changed a couple of years ago. So we have 2 doubles and a single every week. So in the single lessons, I devote to journaling. So a couple of years ago, we did the resilience project through the care group program at my school, and everything that Hugh had talked about in all his videos and diss those people that know that, I think focusing on all of the good things that are happening changes the mindset into something positive. And the more that we are focusing on positives, the more natural that feeling becomes. So the gratitude journal prompts that I've developed is once every week, a couple of prompts. Students get given a journal. It's literally a Kmart book, 20 cents and a pen. It's, you know, not rocket science. Yeah. And I put the prompts up on the board and we listen to a class playlist that the kids have contributed to on Spotify, really create the mood of, you know, setting a relaxing scene in the morning. And the students can then either, you know, word vomit whatever is on their mind, closing some tabs in their brain, or they can then use the prompts if they're really stuck on what to write. So over the year 12s, I gave their journal back at the end of the year. And then at the start of this year, my current year 12s, who I had last year, I gave them back their year 11 journal from last year. And it was really interesting for them to have a read back and reflect on where they've been, what's happened in the meantime, and where they've cut, like where they are now and how much they've grown and developed. So that was enough feedback for me to be like, yeah, this is really important and it's actually making a difference for them. Then in my year 8 classes, the same concept in the health lessons, would have mindful Mondays, first thing on a Monday morning, and we would put the laptops away and they would not be allowed to use them for the whole 45, 50 minutes. And we would do a whole range of different activities. So we'd do a brainstorm at the start of the term and we'd look at, you know, what are some things that can build relationships, teamwork, communication, resilience, you know, all of those sorts of life skills that don't necessarily get, you know, drawn upon in the curriculum. They're just sort of, you know, add-ons. I really wanted to focus on those elements. And we were doing friendship bracelet making. We were doing nature scavenger hunts around the oval. We were doing some active mindfulness. So I've used some of the role plays and activities that Dale Sidebottom had used from the PD that I went with you. We're doing a whole range of things. Even Jenga, I bought, you know, a set from Kmart and I'd written a whole heap of mindfulness questions on there. And it was just a really good way for students to get to know each other, especially in year 8. And I'd also jump in and play too. I'd also play a bit of Uno and we'd put some little elements of like rules on top. You know, if you put out a 5, you have to say one nice thing about everyone at your table. And it had to be non-appearance related. So something about their personality or qualities that they had that you know, other people at their table admired. So over the term, there were some boys I found that weren't really into the mindfulness. And if they'd say something negative, I'd pull them up on it and I'd say, okay, you have to say something nice about everyone at your table. And every time they did it, they would go and groan and grunt. But then I saw one of those year 8 boys on yard duty the other day and I was like, why are you not smiling, mate? What's something you're grateful for today? And he listed something off straight away. And I was like, that's carried through a year later, that those little 1%ers have made a difference in that one child's life. I'm sure it's made a difference in some more as well. So I knew I'd kind of made a bit of an impact there, which was really rewarding.
Absolutely. And sometimes you don't know.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
You nailed it on the head there where you said then that, well, some of the year 8 boys' reactions were, oh, what?
Yeah.
But I think that comes like with that little group mentality as well. When they're around each other, they think, oh, this is probably cool. But yeah, individually, they're actually probably getting something out of it. You just don't realize. And I think that's it's hard for teachers to sometimes, it's hard to assess like this kind of practice because you don't know unless you hear these stories and those little things that you just mentioned about the other day. But you just got to keep going with it. It's that consistency over time. And I think that's when it's going to have a really positive impact on the students. And sometimes you don't know at the time, but a year later, you hear a little story or you have a conversation with that student. You realize, yep, this is working, and yeah, it's a tricky one, like the like assessment of it, but it's I think there's something in here for everyone, like no matter who you are, you're just training your brain to focus on the good things, and if we don't know it at the start, particularly when you're younger, you might not realize it, but then you sort of do notice it in the students, or for me, I notice it myself, like through practice, you do start to see things from a more positive point of view, and sometimes when you do get in that negative mindset, you sort of you're more aware and you catch yourself, and then you can reframe
Yeah.
situation to see it from a more positive point of view. Because this is not about saying you can't get upset or mad or sad. It's just
No, not at all.
giving young people the skills to work through if they are having a bit of a rough time. And oh yeah, I really like also the games. I think games is a really good way to engage, particularly like the younger students, whether that's high school in year 7 and 8. And primary school, of course, and that's the really, I think, the key difference between an effective like well-being or positive education program or whatever you want to call it, is that the game based, and even for older kids like year 12. But I think you mentioned that maybe the journaling has been quite effective, and it might be more suited. So it's working out your students, isn't it? Really, what works for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel
So,
like relationship building is key for me. And, I'm doing my PDP at the moment, and looking at our site goals. And, if you don't have the relationships there, I feel like the well-being's not going to follow, the academic success isn't going to follow. It's all an interconnected web. And if you don't ask how the kids' footy game went on the weekend, or how did your surf meet go on Sunday, if you don't take that 1% of time to take a bit of notice about what the kids are interested in, they don't care about you or your class or what you're trying to teach them. You could be the best facilitator and teacher of all time, but if they can't connect with you, the rest is almost a waste of time. So the relationship building stuff is really important, and throwing away the curriculum for those single lessons has really paid dividends, I think, in the behavior that's happened in the class thereafter, and also the conversations that the kids are having are more mature and in depth. Like I've definitely seen a shift in the last year or two, and catching up with some of last year's year 12s, a couple of girls came in last week to get their laptop sorted out for uni, and having a good conversation with them around the journaling that we did in year 12 last year. And, they're now going to salty sips and going for ice plunges in the beach in the middle of winter because it's mind over matter for them, and it makes them feel good and have all of the adrenaline rushing and endorphins, and it sets them up for their day. And the positive mindset they now have is a complete shift to the way that they would have dealt with any mental health issues that they might have had last year or stress in year 12. So all the little 1%ers, like you said, you don't have that immediate feedback about it working, but you hear all the stories later, and it's that continued language and vocabulary around mindfulness and gratitude that does develop those resilience skills, and they need them these days. Social media is taking over their life, and TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat, all of those things, some of the stuff in the media at the moment is disgusting, and it's being poured down their throat in every different topic and angle. So it's kind of scary to think about what, my kids are 6 and 4. What are they going to be like in 10 years' time when they're teenagers? Hopefully things have developed in this well-being space that they're going to be as well equipped and supported as what these kids are, today that we're trying to put forward for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can just tell the passion that you have for it just through the way you're talking. And but the key is the practice. Like you've got to give the opportunities for young people to practice because they don't know what they don't know. And obviously we want to start as young as possible. Like 6 years of age is a great place to start. And just, I mean, this is probably a bit of out of the blue this question, but what do you do with your kids at home at age 4 or 6 for a while?
So we don't do it all the time, but at the dinner table, you know, we'll have a mindful moment and be like, okay, what were our three good things about today? And they'll list them off. And sometimes they'll make me go first, and I'll say things that are related to maybe spending time with them, or something that I've enjoyed about, you know, the food I've eaten today, or the lesson that I taught at school, or I was able to go to the gym and I felt a bit yucky, so I wanted to, you know, clear my headspace, and going to the gym with my friend was a really nice social catch up. So that was, you know, really helpful for me to then come home and be fun mummy, not grumpy mummy. So they tend to react well to that. And then, the little things that they are coming out with, the more I keep doing it, it's not, oh, I got to watch TV or I got to have dinner. It was more, you know, deeper stuff that they're saying, which is really lovely. So I can then see that when they're going to school and kindy and childcare, they're doing some of those things there as well. So the more that they're getting that information from different areas, it just cements that behavior for them and that positive reinforcement, that being kind and saying nice things about others and helping each other is really nice. You know, even this morning, one daughter was having a tantrum, so the other one was doing her homework and really wanted me to help her, and I couldn't be present with her because I was a bit sidetracked. But before I got in the car this morning, I just said to the older one, look, I really appreciate your patience this morning. You're being such a good big sister in modeling, you know, getting your teeth brushed and putting your shoes on, and, you know, all of that sort of positive language that really hyped her up and put her in a good mood to then go have a good day at school, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that goes question like that. It's a simple thing, like having that conversation around the table, but it's just having that, it's easy for me to say because I'm not actually a parent, but just having that awareness to remember. Obviously, you don't have to do it every day.
Yeah.
But just having that awareness, let's have one of those conversations, like just to build those skills, because it's not hard. Like you're sitting at a table anyway, so you might have a conversation that is beneficial, or I mean, most common. Yeah. You know what I mean? Conversation that is going to be,
it's a learning moment.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was
trying to say. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One thing that I remember last year, I did a lot of journaling in the second half of last year. And sometimes I'd take the girls down to the beach. This is very off topic. And we'd watch the sunset and we'd get some hot chips and sit in the boot and watch the sunset. And that was our like me time together, and it filled their cup up. And I must have been smiling, and my eldest daughter's like, "Mummy, you look happy. Are you going to journal about this tonight?" And I was like, almost made me teary, because I was like, oh my gosh, she's observing my behavior, and that's how she's put two and two together, that, you know, writing in a journal, thinking about things I'm grateful for, saying our good things about the day and being present with each other and having that connection, like that was the powerful thing for me that hit home. I was like, okay, I must be on the right track here.
That's a really good point. And it just shows that kids do watch. Like, obviously,
100%.
Your daughter's seen your journal and sort of click that. It's what you sort of talk about, those positive things. And sometimes I journal a bit as well, and it's just writing, getting stuff off your mind as well.
Definitely.
Not that the kids are probably reading it, but at least you're sharing those things, the positive moments of the day, but also getting off your chest.
Yeah.
Maybe those things that are bothering you. Really good exercise to do. I think it's like a great thing. It's like a bit of a personal therapy.
Yeah, I think everyone should be doing it, and not just doing notes on your phone at the end of each day, actually physically handwriting. And I know it hurts your hand because everyone's typing these days instead of handwriting, and handwriting is, you know, not as it used to look, not as neat. But, yeah, I feel like that's so much more powerful. Yeah. And even reflecting back over the last week or two's entries and just seeing, oh, okay, I've shifted that mood now. I've got that off my chest. I feel so much better. I don't have to keep sitting with that feeling now. I can move on. And whatever that is, whether that is positive or negative, just acknowledging that, you know, we don't have to be happy and smiling all the time. You know, we are human. We're allowed to feel all the emotions, and acknowledging those and getting them out onto paper can be a really safe way for anyone of any age to be able to process those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's only for you. I mean, unless you want to share, it's only for your eyes, though. So it's like
a 100%. Yeah.
Really good process. But I think it's like, just to, I guess, make a point on this, is that, like, I always talk about young kids and also teachers, is that we're responsible. Like if we're having a bad day, like it's really up to us to improve our mood, or we're going through a bit of a rough time. But it doesn't mean, I think the key is to practice when things are going well. So you're still like, I don't know, practicing your going to the gym and things like that. You're writing down what the good things that are happening, and maybe there isn't too many negative things that you're going to write about. It's just that practice to getting the habit of doing things. And I guess coming up with those strategies that you know work for you, and I guess prevention really, isn't it? And
100%.
I think like I remember that when I was teaching at Emmanuel Primary School in Adelaide, the principal had a good conversation with the principal one day, and he said, like when teachers get into the industry, they after all they should know going in that it is going to be challenging. It is a challenging industry, so they really need to come up with skills that like or, what's the word? Strategies themselves to do their own well-being. And I totally agree with that. Like yes, like you mentioned before, that you can share with each other, but that's only one step. Like you actually got to take those resources and actually do something with them.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
Exactly. So yeah, I think number one is yourself, but then like helping each other, that's a good combination. If you've got those two, I think yeah, you can set yourself up for I guess really good experience in schools, because it does like what one thing that I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, Alicia, but one thing I've noticed in the whether that's social media or maybe the media, but there's a lot of negativity around teaching, like the workload and teachers leaving the
Having
industry.
too many holidays.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that as well. But like just the whole the stress of it. And I haven't seen that like it is. I've been in that situation, and I was really lucky. I had a really good supportive school, and I know not everyone necessarily is as lucky as that, and yourself as well. But I think it's like every because I do go to a lot of schools, and it doesn't seem as bad when you're actually in a school as it's reported to be. So what are your thoughts like around what am I trying to ask is I think it's a great industry to be in, and you can
Of
really
course, of
different.
course.
And I just don't see as much negativity in schools as maybe it's reported. What's your thoughts?
Okay. I think it depends on what site you're at, I think, firstly, and how you connect with your colleagues and how supportive leadership is. And that can vary from site to site. External factors like your home life, what you're bringing in your virtual school bag, what you're bringing into school too can also impact on your experience in a school and your headset. But I think, like, I'm part-time at the moment. So for me, I just want to come to school, teach, do my thing, leave, go home, and be with my kids. So unless I was in like a leadership role, and I'm not wanting to, downgrade leadership at all because I was a leader before I had kids, that I think the more responsibility that's put on people in a leadership role, I feel like the expectations are getting higher and higher. And even as a classroom teacher, the amount of admin that is expected of us or that is in our, job description is, I think, growing compared to what it was when I first started teaching in 2011. So there's the whole level of social media impacts. There's also growing rates of mental health, links with the LGBT plus community. There's also a huge growing rate of learning needs and students with, ASD, ADHD, et cetera, that the complexities in the classroom are making it tricky for teachers to differentiate enough to allow those students to be able to flourish at the level that we want them to. As a teacher, we don't want kids to fail. We have a genuine care for the students in our classroom, and it's really tricky to engage students when there's so many complexities that we're, navigating. And it's not the students' fault that this is happening. We want to get some more support in schools and in the classroom that we can help these kids. There might be 5% of the class that we're focusing 90% of our time on. And it makes it really hard for the other students that, may be wanting to excel, that we're spending time with the students that might be at the lower end of this scale rather than stretching the kids that are at the top end of the scale. So I feel like don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does.
The complexities are getting, they're increasing.
Yep.
And I guess the professional development that we're having as teachers maybe needs to be on the same level so that we are able to successfully facilitate and, you know, engage students of all levels, which they're definitely entitled to their education, so that they can all be successful in the area that they want to be. I just feel like there's lots of little things that are going in lots of different directions that is making it harder for teachers to stay on top of everything that they need to. It's not just about coming into the class and teaching what we're passionate about. It's putting out these little spot fires and, like we're wanting to be proactive rather than reactive, but that's also another challenge on top of that as well. So, we definitely take the small wins when they come, and it is a rewarding profession, but I feel like it has got harder, and the element of IT and AI and all of that that's coming in recently, I feel like that's just added that another layer of complexity to us as educators.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the start, what I was trying to say with that question, I meant with all these different responsibilities with that, with the teachers being put on them, because it's ever increasing and not much has been taken away.
Yeah.
What I was meaning to say was that teachers seem to be handling like reasonably well. I mean, well, they might not show it that they're not, but from what
I think it's boiling underneath. People are feeling close to burnout, and we need to support them, I think, a bit better.
Yeah.
And some sites would be doing that more than others, where the leadership coming down is from more of a wellbeing realm, or whether they're more focused on curriculum or academic grades and all that sort of thing. So, it's a hard job. We are doing the best that we can. And I think everyone's doing great.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I was...
Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. It's one of those things, hopefully, I reckon the way it can get, if we can work out a way, this is going to be up to the departments and where it might be, is just to take that admin away from the teachers. Like, it seems to be a lot of data collection and things like that. If we can take that away from the teachers and just let them, what they're there for, teach, it's going to be making a lot, like, it's going to, the experience for everyone's going to be a lot better. The teachers, students going to probably be able to, not that they're not learning, but that relationship building can happen better with the student and teacher, because
100%.
It's 100% teaching, and that's pretty much, well, marking and things like that. But that data collection, that must be just a nightmare. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be able to handle it, I don't think.
I'm not a numbers person. So, it boggles my brain. But, do what we can.
absolutely. Now, I just want to move on. We've got just a couple more things to discuss. Look, I guess that often the work, like we've just been speaking about a little bit, that work-life balance. I guess with the struggle of work-life balance and self-care, what are some of those practical strategies you recommend for educators to maintain their well-being? I know that it's something that you're really passionate about. So what are some of those things?
I love to-do lists. I know that that's not for everyone. Sometimes I write a to-do list and I write a to-do list at the top, and so I can tick it off. So it's like, yes, I've completed one job today. Having calendars, I think, is really important, and having a visual of, you know, when all your due dates are and when you've got, you know, school functions, even your own personal social life events happening, people that have kids, you know, I feel like their social lives are better than ours sometimes. Trying to have a visual for me is really important, that I can see ahead of time when things are happening. So if I need to organize or swap or change anything around, then I've got the flexibility to do that, and it's not like a last minute thing and it makes me feel overwhelmed. I feel like that just reduces the level of well-being and mental clarity. So definitely organizers and prioritizing self-care. Like, you need to have some me time. So for me, that is going to the gym, mental, emotional, social, physical, all of the things. I find that is my outlet. And I'm really lucky at my school, we've got an amazing gym on site that teachers can use after school hours. So a few of us go every week and we, you know, do a workout together. So that is amazing. That is yeah, I'm really lucky to have that. I don't know that that's not available to everyone. But yeah, definitely surround yourself with people that lift you up and give you positive vibes. You know, if you're surrounded in a negative office or, you know, colleagues, it can make it really tricky for you to keep your positive mindset going as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, and teaching, like, it's one of those, because there's so many different personalities within a staff room. Or
yeah.
Staff, particularly when you're a big school, like,
yeah.
What, you would have 100 staff?
Yeah, yeah. A bit more than that. Yep. Yeah.
What, 1,200 kids or something, or maybe more, is it?
Yes, 1,400. Yeah.
So it's quite, I mean, that's a big school. And I guess high schools are generally bigger in size than primary schools, but it's, yeah, it can be a real challenging place. And particularly for a new staff member, it can be quite a challenge to develop those staff friendships and break into those like little groups that can get like, clicky. But if you're aware of that, like, always tell, like, remind teachers about their first day of teaching. Like, can you remember when you first started teaching, whether that's at the school or when they their very first day? And everybody can remember. I'm sure that everyone was nervous and a bit scared. But, and it's like, you just got to put yourself in other people's shoes. It's like that empathy.
That's right, the empathy,
And, I mean, this is just talking about particularly starting a new school, but understanding that, well, everyone wants to, like, belong. They want to be included. They want to feel happy at their workplace. So what can we do for each other to make sure that happens? I think that's a really important part of it. It's just sometimes just having a conversation, like even just calling somebody by their name and saying, good morning, Alicia, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That can make a huge difference. Just that. Put your smile on your face. Oh, that's what they know my name. That's good. And
wearing your name badge is really important. But I think just smiling to someone in the hallway, you know, I've never seen that person before. They work on the other side of the school. It doesn't take, it's free. It does not take any extra out of my day to smile at someone that could make their day. They might have had no sleep last night from their kids too. You know, it doesn't take much to just give someone a nod, just acknowledge that you actually saw them passing by, and that they're seen, you know, they are a valued member of your community. And I feel that's really important.
Absolutely. It's, no, I totally agree with that. And I just want to actually just slight change in direction, but with your Relax and Restore workshops, so who are they for, and what can participants expect, and how does it help with manage or stress management? Because I know that's some of the focus, because it's Relax and Restore. Who's it for? I guess what's included in the workshop, basically?
Sure. So it's split into sort of three sections. The first section is more around, like, goal setting and working out what your values are. So that can really highlight if you're, you know, you really value gratitude or connection with people, and that can kind of help people get involved with different activities or wanting to put themselves out there and engage with, you know, like-minded people in, like, a new activity and meet new people. And a bit of breath work and mindfulness. And then we move into another section in the middle, which is a bit of fun play, sort of taking you back to your younger years where, you know, there's no responsibilities, having a bit of fun, having a laugh, not taking yourself too seriously. And you don't care what anyone else around you thinks, what's going on. You know, there's no social expectations or peer pressure of how you need to act in these workshops. It's a non-judgmental, positive space. And then we end up with some, like, a body scan and some mindfulness and meditation to end. So everyone's feeling very relaxed, rejuvenated, restored, you know, recalibrated, that they've been able to lower their heart rate, think about closing some tabs off in their brain that, you know, maybe we have a million of them some days, and just to have some time for yourself and relax and, you know, hopefully have a clear head then to tackle the rest of your day or your week and, you know, weeks ahead. So that is the Relax and Restore workshop. And in the future, we'll be looking at developing some different styles of workshops. So it's for anyone in any profession. There was a workshop I did last year, which was Wellbeing for Teachers, which was obviously just for people in the education sector. So I'm wanting to provide that same sort of experience for non-teachers as well, because, you know, busy professionals, parents, people that, you know, need some self-care time. It's for everyone. I think that's really important that people have access to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to clarify, these workshops you do is out of schools, not within
Yes.
school time. It's part of the Feather and Tassel project. Yes. So
Yes.
Under that banner. So yeah, it's really cool. So that's what I really wanted to speak to you about, because I know that a lot of people do have ideas that they'd like to do away from school. And yourself as a mum of two girls, and then you've got school as well, job, but you do make time to be able to do these workshops, because I guess it's passion. And if you're really passionate about it, you'll find the time and make you do it. It's not even a chore that you're doing it. You want to do it. It's something that you are passionate about. And what I love about it is you actually take an action. I think we all have ideas and they come and go sometimes. But sometimes you just need to try it to think if you have an idea and you think, oh, yeah, I'm not really into that. But then you have an idea and actually love it. And that's clearly what you've done here. And just encourage people to explore their ideas and have a go, because the worst thing that happens, it doesn't work out and you know worse or better off than you were. You're just where you were. But the upside is huge. So
what have you got to lose? And if you can help people along the way, well, that's a huge bonus. Yeah.
Really. Brilliant. Alicia, I really appreciate your time here today. Certainly a lot of insights, and personally learnt a lot and can take away a lot of things as well. So hopefully the listeners have learned some things that they can apply, whether that's in the classroom as a teacher or for their own benefit, because that's the main purpose of this podcast. And I really appreciate your time today.
No worries. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
No worries.